sight, a moose charged out of the trees and sprang. She ducked, and the moose crashed, skewering the swans. Agatha bolted through the glass stair room, past Pollux on goat legs, who glimpsed the onslaught behind her.
"What in the devils?
A little help!" she yelled.
"Don't move!"
Pollux shrieked. But Agatha was already charging up the honor stairs. When she looked back, she saw Pollux deflecting animals right and left, before 1,000 butterflies crashed through the sunroof and knocked his head off his goat legs, leaving the herd to chase her up the steps.
"Not into the towers!"
Pollux's head screeched as it rolled out the door. But Agatha blew through the corridors into the full classrooms of Hansel's Haven, as boys and teachers tackled porcupines, ill-advised, and screaming girls hopped desks in high heels, extremely ill-advised. She tried to escape the three-ring hubbub, but animals just snatched mouthfuls of candy and kept chase. Still, she managed just enough of a lead to sprint up the stairs, slide through the frosted door, and kick it shut before the first weasel popped through. Agatha doubled over, shadowed by towering hedges of King Arthur. The glacial rooftop breeze bit into her bare arms. She wouldn't last long up here. As she squinted through the clouded door for a teacher or nymph to rescue her, she noticed something reflected in it. Agatha turned to a muscled silhouette, hulking through the sun mist. She wilted with relief. For once, she was grateful for boys and ran towards her faceless prince. She jolted back. The horned gargoyle ripped through mist and blasted the door aflame. Agatha dove to avoid a second firebomb that ignited the hedge of Arthur marrying Guinevere. She tried to crawl to the next hedge, but the gargoyle just burnt them one by one until the king's story was a storm of ash. Stranded in flames, Agatha looked up at the smouldering demon as he pinned her chest to the ground with his cold stone foot. There was no escape from him this time. She went limp and closed her eyes. Nothing came. She opened her eyes and found the gargoyle kneeling before her. So close she could see the reflections in his glowing eyes, reflections of a scared little boy. "You want my help?" she breathed. The gargoyle blinked back hopeful tears. "I don't know how I did it," she stuttered. "It was an accident." The gargoyle gazed into her eyes and saw she was telling the truth. It slumped to the ground, scattering ash around them. Looking down at the monster, just another lost child, Agatha thought of all the creatures in this world. They didn't follow orders because they were loyal. They didn't help princesses because they were loving. They did it because someday, maybe, loyalty and love would be repaid with a second chance at being human. Only through a fairy tale could they find their way back to their imperfect selves, to their storyless lives. She too was one of these animals now, searching for the way out. Agatha bent down and took the gargoyle's hand in hers. "I wish I could help you," she said. "I wish I could help us all go home." The gargoyle lay its head in her lap. As the burning menagerie closed in, a monster and child wept in each other's arms. Agatha felt its stone touch soften. The gargoyle lurched back in shock. As it stumbled to its feet, its rock shell cracked. Its claws smoothed to hands. Its eyes lightened with innocence. Stunned, Agatha ran to it, dodging ricocheting flames just as the monster's face began to melt into a little boy's. With a gasp of joy, she reached for him. A sword impaled his heart. The gargoyle instantly reverted to stone and let out a betrayed cry. Agatha spun in horror. Tedros leapt through a wall of fire onto the gargoyle's horned skull, Excalibur in hand. "Wait!" she shouted. But the prince was staring at his father's memory in flames.
Filthy, evil beast, he choked. No!
Tedros slammed down his sword on the gargoyle's neck and sliced off its head.
He was a boy, a little boy, Agatha screamed. He was good.
Tedros landed in her face.
Now I know you're a witch.
She punched him in the eye. Before she could punch him in the other one, fairies, wolves, and teachers of both schools burst into the menagerie, just in time to see a furious wave crash over the burning roof, lashing the foes apart. Chapter 9. The 100% Talent Show. Sophie was sure Beatrix had set the fire to get Tedros's attention. No doubt he rescued her from the blazing tower, kissed her as good burned, and had already set their wedding date. Sophie came up with this theory because this was what she had planned to do at lunch. Instead, classes were cancelled the next day too, leaving her marooned in a room with three murderers. She stared at the iron plate on her bed, gobbed with soggy gruel and pig's feet. After 3 days of starvation, she knew she had to eat whatever ghastly lunch the school sent up. But this was worse than ghastly. This was peasant food. She flung her plate out the window.
You don't know where I might find cucumbers in this place,
Sophie said, turning. Hester scowled across the room.
The goose. How'd you do it?
For the last time, Hester, I don't know, Sophie said, stomach rumbling. It promised to help me switch schools, but it lied. Maybe it went batty after laying so many eggs. Do you know of a garden nearby with some alfalfa or wheatgrass or...
You talk to it,
Hester blurted, mouth full of oozing pig's foot.
Well, not exactly, Sophie said, nauseous. But I could hear its thoughts. Unlike you, princesses can talk to animals.
But not hear their thoughts, said Dot, slurping gruel that looked chocolate-flavoured.
For that, your soul has to be 100% pure. There. Proof I'm 100% good, said Sophie, relieved.
Or 100% evil, Hester retorted. Depends on if we believe you, or if we believe the stimps, the robes, the goose, and that wave monster.
Sophie goggled at her and burst into sniggers.
100% evil? Me? That's preposterous. That's lunacy. That's...
Impressive, Annadil mused. Even Hester spared a rat or two.
And here we all thought you were incompetent, Hester sneered at Sophie, when you were just a snake in sheep's clothing.
Sophie tried to stop giggling but couldn't.
Bet she has a special talent that blows ours away, said Dot, munching what looked to be a tiny chocolate foot.
I don't understand, Sophie snickered. Where does all the chocolate come from?
What is it? Annadil hissed. What's your talent? Night vision, invisibility, telepathy, fangs filled with poison?
I don't care what it is, Hester snarled. She can't beat my talent, no matter how villainous she is.
Sophie laughed so hard now she was weeping.
You listen to me, Hester seethed, fist curling around her plate. This is my school.
Keep your crummy school, Sophie hooted.
I'm class captain, Hester roared.
I don't doubt it.
And no reader is going to get in my way.
Are all villains this funny?
Hester let out a mad cackle and flung her plate at Sophie, who dove just in time to see it tomahawk into the wanted poster on the wall and slice off Robin's head. Sophie stopped laughing. She peeked over the scorched bed at Hester, silhouetted against the open door, black as death. For a second, Sophie thought her tattoo moved.
Watch out, witch, Hester spat and slammed the door.
Sophie looked down at her shaking fingers. And here we thought she'd fail, Dot chimed behind her. Agatha knew it had to be bad if they let a wolf take her. After the fire, she was locked in her room for 2 days, allowed out only to use the toilet and accept meals of raw vegetables and prune juice from scowling fairies. Finally, after lunch on the 3rd day, the white wolf came and took her away. Digging claws into her singed pink sleeves, he pulled her past the stair-room murals, past glowering Evers and teachers who couldn't even meet her eyes. Agatha fought back tears. She already had 2 failing ranks. Inciting an animal stampede and setting the school on fire had earned her a 3rd. All she'd had to do was pretend to be good for a few days, but she couldn't even manage that. How did she think she could ever last here? Beautiful? Pure? Virtuous? If that was good, then she was 100% evil. Now she would suffer the punishment. And Agatha knew enough about fairy tale punishments, dismemberings, disembowelings, boilings in oil, skinnings alive, to know her ending would involve both blood and pain. The wolf dragged her through the charity tower, past a bespectacled woodpecker jabbing in new rankings on the groom room door. "Are we going to the schoolmaster?" Agatha rasped. The wolf snorted. He dragged her to the room at the end of the hall, and knocked once. "Come in," said the quiet voice inside. Agatha looked into the wolf's eyes. "I don't want to die." For the first time, his sneer softened.
"I didn't either."
He opened the door and pushed her through. Apparently, the fire had finally been brought under control, because classes resumed after lunch on the 3rd day, and Sophie found herself in a damp, moldy classroom for special talents. But she could barely focus with her stomach rumbling, Hester throwing her murderous looks, and Dot whispering to other Nevers about their 100% evil bunkmate. It had all gone wrong. She had started the week trying to prove she was a princess. Now everyone was convinced she'd be evil's captain. Special talents was taught by Professor Sheba Sheeks, the rotund woman with boils on both ebony cheeks.
"Every villain has a talent," she bellowed in her thick, sing-song voice, pacing the room in a busty red velvet, pointy-shouldered gown. "But we must turn your bush into a tree."
For the day's challenge, each Never had to show off a unique talent to the class. The more potent the talent, the higher the student's rank. But the first 5 kids failed to produce anything, with Vex whining he didn't even know his talent.
"Is that what you'll tell the schoolmaster at the circus?" Professor Sheeks thundered. "I don't know my talent," or "don't have a talent," or "don't like my talent," or "want to trade talents with the Ooty Queen."
"She had me till the last bit," said Dot.
"Every year, evil loses the circus of talents," Sheba yelled. "Good sings a song, or waves a sword, or wipes their bottom, and you have nothing better. Don't you have pride? Don't you have shame? Enough. I don't care whether you turn men to stone or turn men to dung. You listen to Sheba, and you'll be number 1.
20 pairs of eyes stared at her.
"Which monkey is next?"
she boomed. The woeful displays continued. Green-skinned Mona made her lips glow red.
"Because every prince is scared of a Christmas tree,"
Sheba moaned. Annadil made her rats grow an inch. Hort sprung a hair from his chest. Arachne popped her one eye. Ruvan burped smoke, and just when their teacher looked completely fed up, Dot touched her desk and turned it to chocolate. "Mystery solved," Sophie marveled.
"I've never seen such a parade of uselessness in my life," Sheba gasped.
But Hester was next. Leering at Sophie, she grabbed the desk with both fists, clenching tighter, tighter, until every vein bulged against her reddening skin. "Turns into a watermelon?" yawned Sophie. "Special indeed." Then something moved on Hester's neck, and the class froze. Her tattoo lurched again, like a painting coming to life. The red-skulled demon unfurled one wing, then the other, swung its buck-horned head to Sophie, and opened slitting, bloodshot eyes. Sophie's heart stopped.
"I told you to watch out," Hester grinned.
The demon exploded off her skin in full-bodied life and tore towards Sophie, shooting red firebolts at her head. Stunned, she fell backward to dodge them, knocking a bookcase to the ground. The shoe-sized beast swooped, launched a bolt that ignited her robes, and Sophie rolled over to stamp out the flames. "Help!"
"Use your talent, incompetent blonde girl,"
Sheba barked, wagging her hips. "She should sing," Dot quipped. "Would kill everyone in the room." Hester circled her demon for a second attack, only to see it snare in the cobwebbed spiked chandelier. Sophie crawled under the last row, glimpsed a fallen book, Encyclopedia of Villains, and ripped through the pages. Banshee, Beenich, Berserker.
"Sophie, hurry!"
Hort screamed. Sophie wheeled to see the winged beast slash through the cobwebs as Hester's eyes flared across the room. She flipped desperately. Crypt bat, cyclops, demon. 10 pages of small print. Demons are supernatural beings that come in an astonishing variety of forms, all with different strengths and weaknesses. Sophie swiveled. The demon was 5 feet away.
"Your talent!" roared Sheba.
Sophie threw the book at the demon and missed. With a lethal smile, it held up a bolt like a dagger. Sheba lunged to intervene, and Anadil tripped her. Screeching, the demon aimed at Sophie's face, but as he slung his bolt, Sophie suddenly remembered the one talent all good girls had. Friends. She spun to the window and let out a gorgeous whistle for a kind, noble animal to save her life. Black wasps smashed through the window and swarmed the demon on cue. Hester jolted back as if she'd been stabbed. Sophie's eyes bulged in horror. She whistled again, but now bats stormed in, sinking teeth into the demon as the wasps continued to sting. The demon crumpled to the floor like a burnt moth. In her seat, Hester's skin went white and clammy, sucked of blood. Alarmed, Sophie whistled louder, higher. But then came a cloud of bees, hornets, and locusts besieging the foaming creature as Hester violently convulsed. In the corner, Sophie stood paralyzed as screaming villains batted them away from the demon with books and chairs, but the swarm had no mercy, savaging it until Hester heaved her last breaths. Sophie threw herself over the demon, thrust her hands at the swarm. "Stop!" The swarm went dead still. Like scolded children, they whimpered obediently and fled out the window in a dark cloud. Wheezing, the wounded demon clawed to Hester and collapsed back into her neck. Hester choked and coughed up phlegm, brought back from the edge. She gaped at Sophie, flooding with fear. Sophie dove to help her.
I wanted a bird or a...
Hester recoiled from her touch.
"Princesses call animals," Sophie cried into silence. "I'm good. 100% good."
"Thank you, Beelzebub."
Sophie whirled.
"Looks like a princess. Acts like a princess. But a witch."
Sheba whooped, wobbling to her feet.
"Mark my words, my useless ones. This one will win the circus crown."
For the second time in 2 challenges, Sophie looked up at the top rank, spewing red smoke above her head. Panicked, she whipped to her schoolmates to appeal. But they were no longer looking at her with contempt or ridicule. They were looking at her with something else. Respect. Her place as number one villain was getting surer by the minute. Up close, Professor Clarissa Dovey, with her silver bun and rosy face, looked even more comforting and grandmotherly. Agatha couldn't have wished for a better executioner.
"I'd prefer the schoolmaster handle these things," Professor Dovey said, flipping papers under a crystal pumpkin paperweight. "But we all know how he is about his privacy."
Finally, she peered up at Agatha. She didn't look comforting any more.
"I have a school full of terrified students. 2 days of classes to make up, 500 animals whose memories must be erased, a classroom wing that's been eaten, a treasured menagerie reduced to ash, and a headless gargoyle buried somewhere underneath all this. Do you know why this is?"
Agatha couldn't get words out of her throat.
"Because you disobeyed Pollux's simple order," Professor Dovey said, "and nearly cost lives in the process."
She shamed Agatha with a look and went back to her scrolls. Agatha glanced through the window at the lakeshore, where Evers were finishing lunches of roast chicken dolloped with mustard, spinach and Gruyere crepes, and flutes of apple cider. She could see Tedros reenacting the menagerie scene for an enthralled audience, sporting his black eye like a badge of honor. "Can I say bye to my friend at least?" Agatha said, eyes welling. She turned to Professor Dovey. "Before you kill me."
"That won't be necessary.
But I have to see her." Professor Dovey looked up.
"Agatha! You received a first rank for your performance in animal communication, and rightfully so. Only a rare talent can make a wish come to life. And though there are different accounts of what exactly happened on the roof, I would add that any pupil of this school who would risk their life to help a gargoyle..."
Her eyes glistened, and for a moment so did the silver swan on her dress.
"Well, that suggests goodness beyond any measure."
Agatha stared at her, tongue-tied.
"But if you disobey another teacher's direct order, Agatha, I guarantee you will fail. Understood?"
Agatha nodded in relief. She heard laughter outside and turned to see Tedros's mates kicking around a pillow dummy with twig legs, coal-button eyes, and black thorns for hair. An arrow suddenly speared its head, spitting feathers everywhere. A second arrow ripped open its heart. The boys stopped laughing and turned. Across the lawn, Tedros threw down his bow and walked away.
"As for your friend, she's doing just fine where she is," Professor Dovey said, thumbing through more scrolls. "But you can ask her yourself. She's in your next class."
Agatha wasn't listening. Her eyes were still on the dead-eyed doll, bleeding feathers into the wind. The doll that looked just like her. Chapter 10 Bad Group. "Who else is in our group?" Agatha asked Sophie, breaking the tension. Sophie didn't answer. In fact, she acted as if Agatha wasn't there at all. The last class of the day, Surviving Fairy Tales, was the only one that mixed students from good and evil. After Professor Dovey ordered Everboys to the armory to turn in their personal weapons, the only way to appease Lady Lesso, furious over losing a gargoyle to Tedros's sword, both schools reported to the Blue Forest Gates, where fairies sorted them into forest groups, 8 Evers and 8 Nevers in each. As other children found their leaders, an ogre for Group 2, a centaur for Group 8, a lily nymph for 12, Agatha and Sophie were the first to arrive under the flag stamped with a blood-red 3. Agatha had so much to tell Sophie about smiles and fish and fires, and most of all about that foul son of Arthur, but Sophie wouldn't even look at her. "Can't we just go home?" Agatha begged.
"Why don't you go home before you fail or end up a mole rat?" Sophie fumed. "You're in my school."
"Then why won't it let us switch?" Sophie spun.
Because we...
Need to go home, Agatha glared. Sophie smiled her kindest smile.
Sooner or later, they'll see what's right.
I'd say sooner, a voice resounded. They turned to Tedros, shirt scorched, eye swollen pink and blue.
If you're itching for something to kill, how about yourself this time? Agatha spat.
Thank you would suffice, Tedros shot back. I risked my life to kill that gargoyle.
You killed an innocent child, Agatha yelled.
I saved you from death against all instinct and reason, Tedros roared. Sophie gaped at them.
You two know each other?
Agatha swiveled to her. You think he's your prince? He's just a puffed-up windbag who can't find anything better to do than prance around half-naked and thrust his sword where it doesn't belong. She's just mad because she owes me her life, Tedros yawned, scratching his chest. He grinned at Sophie. So, you think I'm your prince?
Sophie blushed delicately, the way she had practiced before class.
I knew it was a mistake at the welcoming, the prince said, studying her with dancing blue eyes. A girl like you shouldn't be anywhere near evil.
He turned to Agatha with a scowl.
And a witch like you shouldn't be anywhere near someone like her.
Agatha stepped towards him. First of all, this witch happens to be her friend. And second, why don't you go play with yours before I make those eyes match? Tedros laughed so hard he had to grip the gate.
A princess, friends with a witch. Now there's a fairy tale.
Agatha frowned at Sophie, waiting for her to jump in. Sophie swallowed and turned to Tedros.
Well, it's funny you say that, because a princess certainly can't be friends with a witch, of course. But doesn't it depend on the type of witch? I mean, what exactly is the definition of a witch?
Now Tedros was frowning at her.
And so, what I'm trying to say is...
Sophie looked between Tedros and Agatha. Agatha and Tedros. She swept in front of Agatha and took Tedros's hand.
My name's Sophie, and I like your bruise.
Agatha crossed her arms.
My, my, Tedros said, gazing into Sophie's tantalizing green eyes. How are you surviving in that place?
Because I knew you'd rescue me, Sophie breathed.
Agatha coughed to remind them she was still there.
You've got to be kidding, said a girl's voice behind them.
They turned to see Beatrix, under the bloody three, along with Dot, Hort, Ruven, Millicent, and the rest of their forest group. To chart all the dirty looks thrown in that moment, one would end up with something resembling a bowl of spaghetti.
Said
a voice below. They looked down to find a 4-foot gnome with wrinkly brown skin, a belted green coat, and a pointy orange hat, frowning from a hole in the ground.
Bad group, he murmured.
Grumbling loudly, Yuba the gnome crawled out of his burrow, pulled the gate open with his stubby white staff, and led his students into the blue forest. For a moment, everyone forgot their rancor and marveled at the blue wonderland around them. Every tree, every flower, every blade of grass sparkled a different hue. Slender beams of sun slipped through cerulean canopies, lighting up turquoise trunks and navy blooms. Deer grazed on azure lilacs, crows and hummingbirds jabbered in sapphire nettles, squirrels and rabbits jaunted through cobalt briars to join storks sipping from an ultramarine pond. No animals seemed skittish or the slightest bit bothered by the crisscrossing student tours. Where Sophie and Agatha had always associated forests with danger and darkness, this one beckoned with beauty and life. At least until they saw a flock of bony stimpf birds sleeping in their blue nest.
They let those around students, Sophie said.
Sleep during the day, perfectly harmless, Dot whispered back, unless a villain wakes them up.
As his students followed, Yuba rattled off the history of the Blue Forest in his clipped, hoary voice. Once upon a time, there had been no joint classes for School for Good and School for Evil students. Instead, children had graduated straight from their school's training into the Endless Woods. But before they could ever engage in battle, good and evil inevitably fell prey to hungry boars, scavenging imps, cranky spiders, and the occasional man-eating tulip.
"We had forsaken the obvious," said Yuba. "You cannot survive your fairy tale if you cannot survive the woods."
So the school created the Blue Forest as a training ground. The signature blue foliage arose from protective enchantments that kept intruders out while reminding students it was just an imitation of more treacherous woods. As to just how treacherous the real thing was, the students sensed firsthand as Yuba led them past the north gates. Though there was still sunlight left in the autumn evening, the dark, dense woods repelled it like a shield. It was a forest of eternal night, with every inch of green blackened by shadow. As their eyes adjusted to the sooty darkness, the students could see a puny dirt path lilting through trees, like the withering lifeline on an old man's palm. To both sides of the path, vines strangled trees into armored clumps, so there was barely an undergrowth between them. What was left of the forest floor had been buried beneath mangled thorns, stabbing twigs, and a gauntlet of cobwebs. But none of this scared the students as much as the sounds that came from the darkness beyond the path. Moans and growls echoed from the forest bowels, while low rasps and snarls added ghoulish harmony. Then the children began to see what was making the sounds. Pairs of eyes watched them through the onyx depths, devilish red and yellow, flickering, vanishing, then reappearing, closer than before. The terrible noises grew louder, the fiendish eyes multiplied, the undergrowth crackled with life, and just when the students saw skulking outlines rise from the mist,
"This way," Yuba called back.
The students scampered from the gates and followed the gnome into a blue clearing without looking back. Surviving fairy tales was just like any other class, Yuba explained from a turquoise tree stump, with students ranked from 1 to 16 for each challenge. Only now there was something more at stake. Twice a year, each of the 15 groups would send its best ever and best never to compete in the school's trial by tale. Yuba didn't say any more about this mysterious competition, except that the winners received 5 extra first-place ranks. The students in his group glanced at each other, thinking the same thing. Whoever won the trial by tale would surely be class captain.
"Now, there are 5 rules that separate good from evil," the gnome said, and wrote them in the air with his smoking staff. 1. The evil attack, the good defend. 2. The evil punish, the good forgive. 3. The evil hurt, the good help. 4. The evil take, the good give. 5. The evil hate, the good love. "As long as you obey the rules for your side, you have the best possible chance of surviving your fairy tale," Yuba said to the group gathered in navy grass. "These rules should come with ease, of course. You have been chosen for your schools precisely because you show them at the highest level."
Sophie wanted to scream. Help? Give? Love? That was her life. That was her soul.
"But first, you must learn to recognize good and evil," said Yuba. "In the woods, appearances are often deceiving. Snow White nearly perished because she thought an old woman kind.
Red Riding Hood found herself in a wolf's stomach because she couldn't tell the difference between family and fiend. Even Beauty struggled to distinguish between hideous beast and noble prince. All unnecessary suffering. For no matter how much good and evil are disguised, they can always be told apart. You must look closely, and you must remember the rules.
For the class challenge, Yuba announced, each student had to distinguish between a disguised ever and never by observing their behavior. Whoever correctly identified the good student and the evil student in the fastest time would receive first rank.
"I've never done any of those evil rules," Sophie mourned, standing beside Tedros. "If only they knew all my good deeds."
Beatrix turned.
"Nevers shouldn't talk to Evers."
"Evers shouldn't call Evers Nevers,"
Sophie snapped. Beatrix looked confused, while Tedros bit back a smile.
"You have to prove they switched you and the witch," he whispered to Sophie once Beatrix turned back. "Win the challenge, and I'll go to Professor Dovey myself. If the gargoyle didn't convince her, then this will."
"You do that for me," Sophie said, eyes wide.
Tedros touched her black tunic.
"Can't flirt with you in this, can I?"
Sophie would have burned her robes right there, if she could. Hort volunteered to go first. As soon as he tied the ragged blindfold over his eyes, Yuba stabbed his staff at Millicent and Ruven, who magically shriveled in their pink and black clothes, smaller, smaller, until they slithered out of them, identical cobras. Hort whipped off the blindfold.
"Well?"
Yuba said.
"Looked the bloody same to me,"
Hort said.
"Test them,"
Yuba scolded.
"Use the rules."
"I don't even remember the rules," Hort said.
"Next,"
the gnome grouched. For Dot's turn, he changed Beatrix and Hort into unicorns. But then one unicorn started copying the other and vice versa, until they both pranced about like mimicking mimes. Dot scratched her head.
"Rule one. The evil attack. The good defend," barked Yuba. "Which one started it, Dot?"
"Oh, can we start again?"
"Not just bad,"
Yuba grumped.
"Worst."
He squinted at his scroll of names.
"Who would like to be disguised for Tedros?"
All the Evergirls raised their hands.
"You haven't gone yet,"
Yuba said, pointing at Sophie.
"You either,"
he said to Agatha.
"My grandmother could get this one right," mumbled Tedros, tightening his blindfold.
Agatha tramped in front of the glass and stood next to Sophie, who was blushing like a bride.
"Aggie, he doesn't care what school I'm in or the colour of my robes," Sophie gushed. "He sees who I am."
"You don't even know him," Sophie flushed.
"You're not happy for me."
"He knows nothing about you," Agatha shot back. "All he sees is your looks."
"For the first time in my life, I feel like someone understands me,"
Sophie sighed. Hurt squeezed Agatha's throat.
"But what about... I mean, you said..."
Sophie met her eyes.
"You've been such a good friend, Aggie. But we'll be in different schools, won't we?"
Agatha turned away.
"Ready, Tedros? Go!"
Yuba jabbed his staff, and both girls exploded from their clothes into slimy, stinky hobgoblins. Tedros took off the blindfold and jumped back, hand to nose. Sophie clasped her green claws and batted her wormy lashes at him. With Sophie's words throbbing in her head, Agatha slumped sullenly and gave up.
"It seems too obvious," Tedros said, eyeing the flirting hobgoblin.
Sophie stopped batting her lashes, confused.
"And that witch is craftier than you can imagine," Tedros said, glancing between the two goblins.
Agatha rolled her eyes. This boy had a brain like a peanut.
"Feel with the heart, not the mind,"
Yuba shouted at the prince. Grimacing, Tedros closed his eyes. For a moment, the prince hesitated. But then surely, powerfully, he felt himself pulled towards one of the hobgoblins. Sophie gasped. It wasn't her. Tedros reached out and touched Agatha's wet, warty cheek. "This one's Sophie," he opened his eyes. "This one's the princess." Agatha gawped at Sophie, dumbstruck. "Wait. I'm right," Tedros said. "Right?" For a moment, everything was quiet. Sophie tackled Agatha.
"You ruin everything!"
To everyone else, this sounded like
"Gobo umi hua."
But Agatha understood it just fine.
"See how stupid he is? He can't even tell us apart," Agatha yelled. "You tricked him," Sophie shrieked. "Just like you tricked the bird and the wave and the..."
Tedros punched her in the eye.
"Leave Sophie alone," he shouted.
Sophie gaped at him. Her prince had just punched her. Her prince had just confused her with Agatha. How could she prove who she was?
"Use the rules,"
Yuba bellowed atop a log. Suddenly understanding, Sophie lurched up so her spotted, humped body towered over Tedros, and she caressed his chest with her greasy green hand.
"My dear Tedros, I forgive you for not knowing any better and won't defend myself even though you attacked me. I only want to help you, my prince, and give us a story that will take us hand in hand to love, happiness, and ever after."
But all Tedros heard was a torrent of goblin growls, so he stomped on Sophie's foot and ran towards Agatha's goblin, arms outstretched.
"I can't believe you were ever friends with..."
Agatha kneed him in the groin.
"Now I'm confused,"
Tedros wheezed and collapsed. Moaning in pain, he craned up to see Sophie shove Agatha into a blueberry bush. Agatha smacked Sophie with a screeching squirrel, and the two green goblins go back and forth, bashing each other like oversugared children.
"I'll never go home with you," screamed Sophie.
"Ooh, ooh, marry me, Tedros," hissed Agatha.
"At least I will get married."
The fight escalated to a ludicrous climax, with Sophie beating Agatha with a blue squash, Agatha sitting on Sophie's head, and the class gleefully making bets as to who was who.
"Go rot in Gavaldon alone," Sophie screamed. "Better alone than with a phony," Agatha shouted. "Get out of my life.
You came into mine." Hobbling, Tedros leapt between them.
"Enough."
It was the wrong moment. Both goblins turned on the prince with slime-drenching, ear-splitting roars and kicked him so hard he sailed over groups 2, 6, and 10 and landed in a heap of boar dung. The girls' green hide shrank, their scales softened to skin, their bodies melted into their human clothes. Slowly, Sophie and Agatha turned to find the entire group goggling at them.
"Good ending," said Hort. "Hold your verdict," Yuba said, "for when good acts evil, and evil acts incompetent, and rules are broken right and left, until even I can't figure out what's what, well, there's only one ending indeed."
Two pairs of iron shoes magically grew on the girls' feet.
"Eek! These are hideous," Sophie frowned.
Then the shoes grew hot. Blazing hot.
"Fire! Feet on fire!"
yelped Agatha, hopping up and down.
"Make it stop!"
Sophie cried, dancing with pain. In the distance, the wolves howled the end of class.
"Class dismissed,"
Yuba said, and waddled off.
"What about us?"
screamed Agatha, yanking at her burning soles.
"Unfortunately, fairy tale punishments have a mind of their own,"
the gnome called back.
"They'll end when the lesson has been learned."
The class followed him back towards the school gates, leaving Sophie and Agatha to dance in the cursed shoes. Tedros limped past the punished girls, covered in slime and dung.
He gave them equally disgusted scowls.
Now I see why you two are friends.
As the prince trudged into Blue Thicket, the girls glimpsed Beatrix sidle up to him.
I knew they were both evil, she said, as they vanished behind the oaks. This is your fault,
Sophie wheezed to Agatha, dancing in agony.
Please, let it stop, Agatha spluttered.
But the shoes showed no mercy. Minute by minute, they grew hotter and hotter, until the two girls couldn't even scream. Even the animals couldn't watch such suffering and stayed away. Afternoon turned to evening, and then to night, and still they danced like mad women, whirling and sweating in pain and despair. Burn ripped through their bones. Fire became their blood, and soon they wished that this suffering would end at any cost. Death knew when he was called. But just as the two girls surrendered to his cruel hands, sabers of sunlight shattered the darkness, speared their feet, and the shoes went cold. The girls collapsed in tormented heaps.
Ready to go home, Agatha panted.
Sophie looked up, ghost white.
Thought you'd never ask.
Chapter 11 The Schoolmaster's Riddle. As the two schools slept, two heads surfaced outside in the black moat. Sophie and Agatha peeped out at the thin silver tower that divided lake from sludge. Too far to swim, too high to climb. A cyclone of fairies guarded its spire, while an army of wolves with crossbows manned wooden planks at its base.
And you're sure he's up there?
Sophie said.
I saw him. He has to help us. I can't go back to that place.
Look, we just beg him for mercy until he sends us home.
Because that'll work, Sophie snorted.
Leave him to me. For the last hour, the two girls had mulled every possible way to escape. Agatha thought they should sneak into the woods and find their way back to Gavaldon, but Sophie pointed out that even if they did get past the gate snakes and any other booby traps, they'd just end up lost. They're called the Endless Woods for a reason. Instead, she proposed they hunt for enchanted broomsticks or magic carpets or something else in the school closets that might fly them over the forest. And what direction would we fly in? Agatha asked. The two girls discarded other options, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. That never worked. Seeking a kindly hunter or dwarf. Agatha didn't trust strangers. Wishing for a fairy godmother. Sophie didn't trust fat women. Until there was only one left. But now, peering up at the schoolmaster's fortress, they lost all hope.
We'll never get up there, Sophie sighed.
Agatha heard a squawk in the distance. Hold that thought. A short while later, they were back in the blue forest, caked in sludge, eyeing a nest of big black eggs from behind a periwinkle bush. In front of the nest, five skeletal stimps slept on indigo grass, littered with the blood and limbs of a half-eaten goat. Sophie scowled.
I'm back where I started, covered in smelly ooze and who knows how many flesh-eating maggots, and what are you doing?
As soon as they attack, we jump on.
As soon as they what?
But Agatha was already tiptoeing to the eggs.
The shoes burnt your brain, Sophie hissed.
As Agatha inched towards the nest, she caught a closer look at the sleeping stimp's jagged teeth, gnarled talons, and spiked tails that shred flesh from bone. Suddenly doubting her plan, Agatha backed up, only to trip on a branch and fall on a goat leg with a loud crack. The stimps opened their eyes. Her heart stopped.
Unless a villain wakes them up.
The pink dress wouldn't fool them. Agatha glowered at the waking fiends. She couldn't give up now, not when she had Sophie willing to go home.
She lunged for the nest, snatched an egg, sprang up for the blitz. "Can't watch! Can't watch!" Sophie mewled, squinting through fingers for spewing limbs and blood. But the vicious birds were nuzzling Agatha, like puppies seeking milk.
"Ooh, that tickles," she squealed.
Sophie folded her arms. Clumping back, Agatha handed the egg to her. "Your turn."
"Oh, please. If they like you, they'll try to mate with me. Animals worship princesses," Sophie said, sashaying towards the birds.
The stimps unleashed a war cry and charged.
"Help!"
Sophie threw the egg to Agatha, but the stimps still chased Sophie, who ran in circles like a lunatic, five stimps high-stepping behind her in a moronic maypole parade until everyone forgot who was after who and the birds knocked into each other dizzily.
"See? I outsmarted them," Sophie beamed.
A stimp bit her bottom.
"Aye!"
Sophie ran for the nearest tree. Only she couldn't climb trees, so she hurled mashed gooseberries at the bird's eye, but the bird had no eye, so the berries went right through bony socket and plopped to the ground. Agatha watched, stone-faced.
"Aggie, it's coming!"
The stimp charged for Sophie, only to stop short and find Agatha perched on its back.
"Get on, you dimwit!" she shouted at Sophie. "Without a saddle," Sophie scoffed. "It'll leave chafe marks."
The stimp lunged for her. Agatha walloped its head and slung Sophie by the waist onto the bird's spine.
"Hang on tight," Agatha yelled, as the bird thrashed up to flight, somersaulting over the bay to get the girls off its back.
Four more stimps exploded from blue trees in murderous pursuit. Agatha kicked at the bird's thigh bones, Sophie holding onto her for dear life.
"This is the worst plan ever!"
Hearing squawks and screams, the fairy and wolf guard squinted into the sky, only to see the intruders vanish into fog.
"There's the tower!" Agatha cried, spotting the silver spire through the mist.
A wolf's arrow whizzed between the stimp's ribs, almost slicing Sophie in half. Fairies stormed out of the fog, shooting golden webs from their mouths, and the stimp dove to avoid them, spinning to elude a new hail of wolf arrows. This time, neither girl could hold on and tumbled off its back.
"No!"
screamed Agatha. Sophie caught the last bone of the stimp's tail. Agatha caught the last bit of Sophie's glass shoe.
"We're going to die!"
Sophie howled.
"Just hold on!" bellowed Agatha. "My hands are sweaty!" "We're going to die!"
The stimp zoomed for the tower wall, but just as it whipped its tail to smash them, Agatha saw a window glint through fog.
"Now!" screamed Agatha.
This time, Sophie listened. Golden nets shot from every direction, and the stimp let out a helpless screech. But as fairies watched, it plunged to its death. They looked at each other curiously. There were no riders on its back. The crash landing through the window left Sophie's entire right side bruised and Agatha's wrist gashed. But pain meant they were still alive. Pain meant they still had hope for getting home. With a chorus of groans, they staggered to their feet. Then Sophie saw the worst of the damage.
"My shoe!"
She held up her glass heel, snapped to a serrated stump.
"They were one of a kind," she mourned.
Agatha ignored her and limped ahead into the murky grey chamber, barely lit by the window's dawn glow.
"Hello?"
Agatha called. Echoes died unanswered. The girls inched farther into the shadowy room. Stone bookcases cloaked grey brick walls, packed top to bottom with colourful bindings. Sophie dusted off a shelf and read the elegant silver letters on the wooden spines. Rapunzel, the Singing Bone, Thumbelina, the Frog King, Capo Rushes, the Six Swans. all the stories the children of Gavaldon used to drink up. She looked over at Agatha, who had made the same discovery across the room. They were standing in a library of every fairy tale ever told. Agatha opened up Beauty and the Beast to find it written in the same elegant script as the spine, illustrated with vivid paintings like the ones in the foyers of both schools. Then she opened up The Red Shoes, Donkey Skin, and The Snow Queen, and found that they too were written in the same regal hand.
Aggie?
Agatha followed Sophie's gaze to the darkest part of the room. Through the shadows, she could make out a white stone table pressed against the wall. There was something looming over it, a long, thin dagger dangling magically in mid-air. Agatha ran her fingers along the cold, smooth surface of the table and thought of all the blank headstones behind her house, waiting for bodies. Sophie's eyes fixed on the hovering knife, eerily still a few feet above the white slab. That's when she saw it wasn't a knife at all.
"It's a pen," she said softly.
It was made of pure steel and shaped like a knitting needle, lethally sharp at both ends. One side of the pen was engraved with a deep, flowing script that ran unbroken from tip to tip. Suddenly, the pen caught a sliver of sunlight and scattered blinding gold rays in every direction. Agatha turned from the glare. When she turned back, Sophie was climbing onto the table.
"Sophie, no!"
Sophie walked towards the pen, eyes wide, body rigid. The world dissipated in a blur of grey around her. All that remained was the shimmering, spindle-sharp pen, strange words reflecting in her glazed eyes. Somewhere inside, she knew what they meant. She reached for the tip.
"Don't!" Agatha cried.
Sophie's skin kissed ice-cold steel, blood about to pierce through. Agatha tackled her and both girls crashed to the table. Sophie broke from her trance and peered at Agatha suspiciously.
"I'm on a table. With you."
"You were about to touch it," Agatha said.
"Huh? Why would I touch it?"
Her eyes drifted up to the pen, which was no longer still. It dangled an inch from their faces, pointing between them with its deadly sharp tip, as if weighing who to kill first.
"Don't move," Agatha said between clenched teeth. The pen seared hot red.
"Move!" she cried. The pen plunged, and both girls rolled off the table, only to see the razor-sharp nib lurch to a stop just before it hit stone. A puff of black smoke and a book suddenly appeared on the table beneath it, bound with cherry-red wood. The pen flipped the cover open to the first blank page and began to write. "Once upon a time, there were two girls." The same elegant script as all the others, a brand new fairy tale. Sophie and Agatha gaped from the floor, terrified.
"Now that's odd," said a gentle voice.
The girls whipped around again. No one there.
"Students at my school train and toil for 4 years, venture into the woods, seek their nemeses, fight vicious battles,"